Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. If you'd like to find more sessions, interviews, and story podcasts, visit our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. This podcast features a program session from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
So I'm assuming everybody here has something to deal with infrastructure, right? How many in this room, now come on, get lively, okay? How many in this room have ever wanted to just throw it all out and start all over again? Okay. Well, welcome to my nightmare. We had one key objective, to redesign the enterprise, a full forklift upgrade to hit 5.9s on all tier one applications. That's not 5.9s that server's running. That's 5.9s that my customer is getting that service. It's 37 major projects we embarked upon at the same time, and we did it in 18 months. So y'all want to dump your infrastructure? Before I even get into the presentation, I will point out the fact that while I'm speaking in this presentation, it's on the backs of 152 OTS members, Office Technology Services, along with six strategic partners we worked with. The reason for this presentation this way to start is straightforward. Initially, after about 6 months of exhaustion, my favorite comment was always, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. The typical feedback I got from my team was, yeah, and it's a train. Okay? So as you embark on a project that's going this fast, this furious, motivation of your staff is critical. The best part is, in this entire process, the same team that started is the same team we have now. So I didn't kill anybody. Of course, Mario thinks different. Yeah, it almost did. This is a very high-level overview of what we did. Deep dives at all those different conferences have been presented, whether you're talking about KPIs, selling this to senior executives, to virtualization, to managing your environment. Deep dives in all the different subjects of these. This is a very high level. The very first time I gave this presentation was EDUCAUSE Regional, and then it was DNA of 5.9s. We were sitting down, we'd been 6 months in, we had built our roadmap, and so here's your architecture, here's what you're gonna have to do as we were building out at that time. So as I come back this time, I'm able to say, this is what you have to do, and this is what really happened. So it's a little bit of a different approach. We'll talk a little bit about our approach with Simplify IT and IT maturity levels. We'll get into the good old technology in here too, don't worry, dynamic master plan. Take you through some modeling and then some of our outcome, what really happened, along with good old lessons learned, because we learned a lot in this project. First, a little bit about Lone Star College System. We're rather large. I've got 13 geographic locations. I'll have 18 by the end of this next year with five new locations coming on board. These are 80,000 square foot facilities with about 600 endpoints in each one of them. So they're not small outposts. Same time, we're supporting right now 90,000 students. So I got 90,000 terrorists in my organization. Oh, I said that out loud. This wasn't recorded. Okay, so as we sit, we've got this large infrastructure, 1,400 square miles, that we've got to provide 5.9 service delivery across the enterprise to every location. The biggest challenge, 2007, IT was the enemy. We didn't provide service. Things broke all the time. There was no confidence that we could deliver anything. The person standing in the back here came on February 1st of 2008. By February 1st, 2008 at 9 a.m., we were informed that we were all now one central IT organization. No longer were we six entities, we were one. So as we embarked on this, we went through a total reorganization from a decentralized IT to a fully centralized IT. Getting a little scary now? Yeah, I know. It'll work into it. Don't worry. So at the same time we're building these standards, we're getting these teams together, he comes in and says, I want you to build a 5.9s architecture, a 5.9s delivery of service. Being the crazy person I am at, I'm like, okay, cool, let's do it. Same time, 20 other strategic initiatives were happening, IT related. This was a master plan that had been laid out with our campus directors, our constituents on what are we going to do to really enable innovation in Lone Star College System. So new ERP, Guess what the timeline was? Somebody guesses. I got a 16 gig flash drive. Oh, man. I don't have enough flash drives. Who was the first one? 18 months. Roll out a new ERP. Go on. Who was the first one? Where? Hey, the first one to catch. Oh, not a bad throw. Wish my golf game was that good lately. Okay, at the same time, we were improving IT security. In other words, we're creating IT security. Rolling out a full client management, centralized client management system with Alteryx. Totally managing those endpoints. And the list goes on and on and on and on. Okay. First strategy was pretty simple. How many of you have heard Simplify IT? You ever find a book or a cookbook you can do it with? There isn't one. Simplify IT is one of those terms that you can look around, you can find all kinds of great ideas. We approach it pretty simple. Reduce complexity. I don't need complexity in the organization. If I'm going to deliver five nines, everybody's got to be able to support it. Set enterprise standards. Make a decision. Evaluate everybody. Imagine trying all the vendors I had to bring in to evaluate every type of technology to select the what is the key, what is the best in breed. At the same time you're doing this and you're building out, this team has to now come around detailed process methodologies. How do you do this? What do you do in this case? How do you document that? And follow that as we build. You can't go back afterwards and start to document everything. By then it's too late. Increasing our staff knowledge, you bring in a technology and you say this is our core technology, you better train them. And you better train them to be the best and motivate them to get to that level. They've got to be there. All of the interdependencies we reduced. So any interdependency I have now, I know exactly what it is and why it's there and what its value is to me. Another part that's critical, straightforward, is an organization has to raise their IT maturity. By doing this, you become a strategic business partner and you start adding value to the organization. By doing this, when I'm changing out every one of my customers from one AD to another and I'm having nothing but nightmares, they're supporting me. By communicating that we're doing this to improve our future and that they see what we're doing, they can support it as we went through all the rough pain points during this project. You can't do five nines on technology alone. No way. People will always mess it up. If you don't have the processes, you can't get it fixed correctly. So technology, people, and processes are critical. The business value comes in to gain the support from the executive buy-in, to put through those pain points when you do have a rough patch, keeping them informed about the project. They know, hey, we might lose a service at a time when we don't want to. They'll support you if you communicate and you show value. Okay, we're almost to the technology part. I know that's what you're waiting for. The last part was the crazy dynamic master plan. And it really wasn't that crazy. It was pretty straightforward. We knew our network was useless. We knew our Active Directory was useless. When Microsoft evaluated our Active Directory, they first said, I can't believe this is actually working. Maximize virtualization. You notice I didn't say server virtualization. I said virtualization as a whole. So we're talking switch, server, and storage. Approach anything you can, and thin clients now. Improve security and monitoring has to happen. If I'm not monitoring this environment proactively, I can't support it. And, of course, security is critical. One key factor, of course, eliminate every single point of failure you can find. Look for them, hunt them down, and eliminate them. Leverage new technologies and replication, and you have to have automation. I've got to have a failure happen that I know the failure happened only because a monitoring system told me I had the failure happen for that split second as the service was restored immediately. It's got to be done through automation. Five nines is 6 minutes a year. It's not an easy target. So a very deep monitoring strategy. So we'll dig into each one of these. Like I said before, it was come down to a lot of assessments. What do I have? What are the problems I'm seeing? All the way from the storage area network, the data centers. You notice they weren't up on that top list. There wasn't 37 projects on the top list. It was, this is where we need to go. We know we're going to have to dig into every layer of technology that supports the infrastructure. We're going to have to rebuild the foundation from scratch. How deep we dig, that's the important part. 2008, this is what my wide area network looked like. It was a very impressive 300 meg ONS ring with 48 single points of failure. But I had this prime 4,600 miles of dark fiber in the ground. I had connections all over I could utilize. It just had never been leveraged. We had a single point of failure with a 500 meg internet connection, and our DR connection was a 10 meg connection that was a hard start. So you basically had to initiate everything to get it going. And that was just to pay, do payroll. That was the whole objective. First thing we did was we redesigned the wide area network, and we focused on taking that fiber, maximizing it, and eliminating the ONS ring by putting multipaths to each location. So the first round was put multipaths to each one, single 1 gig links into a 6500 core. Pretty straightforward. That's the initial phase. Next critical part was my head ends. I had single points of failure all across my head ends. What we ended up doing in this process is we had required a location recently. It was 37 miles away. We extended our fiber out to that location, and I'll discuss that one a little further later. And we stood up another head end. We put a 40 gig backplane between the two, so tunneling 10 gig links. And we were able to then to extend into where I have two different carrier internet providers. Can come in either direction, doesn't matter to me. Can go out either direction, doesn't matter to me. Along with redundancy in our firewalls, our DMZ, all based upon two logically separated data center networks instead of extending your network. The risk you face of extending your network to another location down the road, of course, is high. By totally separating them, you protect yourself in that subnet, in that range. The problem with it is it's harder to manage. So we kind of introduced complexity. To turn it around, we pulled in an ACE load balancer to manage that connectivity. Since we put this dual internet connection in, we had 6 times we had an internet failure on one leg or the other. Nobody ever saw anything. They will not see an impact whatsoever. 10 gig fabric SAN, conversion over, so I can bring my Brocade network in and run it across 40 gig pipe. You can tunnel it through on the Nexus side. Last part of our network redesign was to take this to a really true full mesh. As you can tell, it's a little simplified. Not every location would fit on there without you ever seeing anything. But we turned around to a full mesh 10 gig link using 28 VSS cores across the enterprise. So now I can have a core failure at a site. I can have a fiber break at a site. I can eliminate everything that's in the possible realm there. At the same time, during this progress, all the way through, we constantly mature the use of SolarWinds for deep monitoring of our network, all the way down to switch change auditing. Somebody makes a change on a switch, I don't care where that switch is, it's recorded and reported. So we have to keep close tabs on what's happening in the network to protect ourselves. Okay, we're done with the network already. That was a fun trip, wasn't it? Active Directory and Exchange. Like I said, during our first assessment, Active Directory and Exchange, Microsoft couldn't figure out how it worked. They couldn't figure out. We had such bad replication problems inside of our Active Directory. I had 14 domains with limited trusts, 27 DNS zones, 16 WAN servers, all trying to traverse this network on a 300 meg ONS ring. And then, of course, as I widened the pipe, I managed to increase the problem. This project started at the same time we were doing the LAN phase, as you can see by the date on the top. So these are all running concurrently, of course. So constant replication errors, no health monitoring of any kind. We had to turn around and figure out what is the best design. So the first phase of our AD project was to redesign a new Active Directory infrastructure that could support an enterprise our size. End result was 2 domains, one admin, one student, highly interlinked. We moved to Exchange 2007 at the same time because that is your most painful migration from 2003, of course. You're going 2003 to 7 is the same pain points as 10. Now to go to 10 for us is pretty much seamless. Challenge, of course, in this next phase was migrating the users from their old domains into a new domain without interrupting their service delivery or their resources at the same time. We had to migrate 10,000 Exchange accounts. We trimmed those 27 DNS zones down into 5. We took out 16 WAN servers down to 3, and we're down to 1 right now. Most of them don't know it yet, and it can go away pretty soon. Our WAN servers will not exist probably by January. So we've been constantly monitoring what applications are really looking for WAN still, and the reality is you don't need it in your environment. Just one more complicated item. We implemented an AD change auditor. So we have complete control of what's happening in AD and exposure to anything happening. I can immediately pull up AD and look at how healthy it is, how long it's taking to traverse replication across my environment. Important part of proactive monitoring is to know what's going on at all times. And the last part, of course, before we had no account provisioning, now we have a highly automated account provisioning to include external entities outside of our environment. The last phase, the behind-the-scenes phase, migrating all of these servers from they were sitting on the side in their old domain with a relationship to the new domain. So now you have to collapse this and, of course, decommission the domain. And that's the scariest part. The day you want to turn that off, it's like, hope I got everything covered, because you could turn it off and kill everything if there's still any relationships in there. So we had 400 physical servers out in the campus level we had to migrate. This is not counting our main data center side. Out of the 14 locations, 70% of the hardware was end of life. Luckily, I had a virtualization strategy happen at the same time. So we had the opportunity to actually stand up all new hardware at every location in what we call a campus virtualization, a VM farm. So as they migrated from physical to virtual in new hardware, and it simplified the process all along. So we migrate the server, then P to V, and it's in the new farm and running. During that process, we found out of those 400, 260 of them were just sitting there useless. They were just iron turned on, not needed for anything. It's amazing what you can find out there. Okay, so now we'll move into the next nightmare. Storage area network. Simplify IT. I had three disparate SANs in the main data center. I had five different solutions on each campus, as you could tell. Five campuses, five solutions. These arrays were end of life. One of them, the manufacturer, went out of business, and you couldn't even have a chance of getting support for. At the same time, we really had no standard for backup and recovery. We had what was happening at one location, totally different than everywhere else. So standardization again. What is the best practices? What can we do? We only had a two gig brocade network, and we only had 20 terabytes of replicated storage. That was our entire storage area network running an enterprise our size. No single pane of glass. We couldn't look into the storage, see what's happening, what the health is, how the replications are happening, are the snaps really working? Wasn't visible to us. Today, I have consolidated all SANs into a traditional tier 1, 2, and 3 storage array, high speed, mean, low, archive, dedupe. Complete high availability design, two data center locations, 37 miles to traverse between the networks, and constant replication between sides. We went to an Avamar disk-to-disk backup and recovery system because we have critical, very short RTO windows. RTO and RPO for us is extremely short. So I've got to be able to guarantee that I can recover that as quick as possible. Same time, we moved into an enterprise tape solution offsite model, traditional model, but this time it's one set of tape decks. It's not tape decks everywhere. All campuses are backed up remotely using disk-to-disk arrays first. That's it. We also integrated the EMC storage into the VM storage virtualization. We have two different approaches to storage virtualization. We have what we have with EMC and also what we're doing with HP Left-Hand Networks storage arrays. One of the other major points of failure we knew we had was a data center. Our data center in our main office was a Tier 2 facility. That's it. Inefficient, extremely high risk. Everything's riding in that one location. We had a cold DR site that really only backed up our ERP application, and that was it. Campuses, problems with backup power, cooling, fire suppression. First thing we started doing was evaluating offsite host locations. We had a couple good locations in our area we could have gone to, extended our network out into those locations. Problem is, what we found is we found either an all hot, all cold, but really not an active environment we could move into. To do that, the cost was extremely high. There's ways you could do it. We found one that was willing to let us bring our own dark fiber in, connect in this to this direction, and basically run our data center out of there. Just getting the fiber to the location was ridiculous. We acquired 1.2 million square feet of HP's property in Houston, Texas, formerly Compaq World Headquarters. The nice part about this was they designed the infrastructure of the facility to meet Tier 4 data center standards. Two commercial power feeds coming into the campus across the road, kind of far away. four power paths coming into the facility, dual cooling towers. So they had put an infrastructure in that could support a Tier 4 data center very easily. What we did is we turned around and said, okay, we're going to build one. That's the new plan. In March, we had finalized the design specs and released the RFP. We selected the firm, got through all the contracts by June. We just commissioned a Tier 4 green, high-density, liquid-cooled data center. The facility itself, like I said, the dual commercial power, the dual generator feeds, 99.9% flywheel-type technology APC, UPSs. Closed-loop cooling. I can stand and talk to you in that room in a whisper. We can have a conversation. The only thing that's noisy in the room is the network side. So you have to stand on one side of the data center. All this is packed. Oh, I forgot the best part, what I really like. If you had your fire suppression system go off in your data center right now, how long are you going to be down for? Well, we're closed in rack. I'm going to put out one rack. I'm not going to spray the room. Everything's contained and sealed. So in rack fire suppression was deployed here. All this is packed, 27 racks, 240 kW into 970 square feet. Extremely high density data center. Now, I wish I could pop some efficiency numbers for you. I can actually tell PUE immediately. We just commissioned. You need 30 days for that. But I'll be able to see real-time PUE on this facility and on our traditional forced air data center we have in our main area. Virtualization, my favorite topic. You can virtualize everything. We had less than 5% of our servers were virtualized. Now, let's be realistic here. We all know virtualization is a great technology. Gives you a lot of flexibility. It was limited to a test dev environment, a couple of production servers here and there, maybe a print server or that, nothing major. Typical purchase was a single server license. Buy a host here, run it off. Today we're running a virtual farm capacity that run two virtual centers on, one test dev, one production. In this farm, I run 14 virtual data centers. I have 1.4 terabytes of memory capacity. We no longer measure by server capacity. It's all by how much processing power do I have, how much memory. This is one entity in VM. I can immediately look and see what I can put out there. And running 790 VMs across that enterprise. So through virtualization, you're going back to the technologies of what processing power, what memory, what disk do I have, not customer, yeah, you need to buy this server. Change the approach. Into the virtualization a little further, we have the VM first policy that was December 2008. You want a virtual server today? I can put it up like this. You want a physical server? You need 45 days. What's going to take you? Got purchasing problems. You know all the nightmare you can have. VM first policy is critical. The customers love it. They don't care what it's running on. They want to run this application. You tell them, we need to do this. It's going to cost you this, and I'll have it for you in a couple of days. Improves IT service delivery. The campus VM solution and the main VM farms were all designed out in a partnership with HP to where we looked at what is the best way we can approach this. Two blade centers for a critical reason is if I have a blade center fail or blade system. HP, nobody in HP in the room? Okay, good. If I have a failure of a chassis, they're interlinked. So the same VMs on the top can still run on the interlink if I have a backplane failure. So it's critical to have that redundancy at that level. Today we're at 82% virtualized, including Tier 1. Our ERP is virtualized. We're going to be by 95% by May of 2011. That target date to roll out Exchange 2010. We were not allowed to do Exchange in a virtualized environment at the time we rolled out Exchange 2007. Microsoft would not support it. So we went physical. All those are turning virtual as we roll into 2010. Same time, we leverage storage virtualization. So in our model, this is how it works now. What just went offline there would have been an instructional data center. In this case, it would be Mario's Fairbanks Center, located way down in the west part of our area. They had a failure of hardware. Immediately, SRM moved their services over and transitioned the applications to run from the campus farm. If a campus farm fails, it's designed to automatically transition it to a main data center farm. If two farms fail, if that center's farm was supposed to go this way and that's not available, it's going to go up into to one of the data centers. All these are mapped out in Site Recovery Manager in VMware. So you have to plan each place where you want to move to and have that capability. Monitoring, we had nothing. A few ping monitors, pretty basic monitoring of services, but no strategy to monitoring. What we did is we implemented at each level, every time we rolled out a new piece, we looked at what is the monitoring level we need on that. So we put in what we're calling deep monitoring in the enterprise. The reason I can say it's deep is because the tool I'm showing here, eAlert, actually tells me how much power is coming out of the commercial power feed coming into the data center. And I can track it all the way down to my cold water, what's the temperature, how much flowing, what's the pressures, all the way down to the power in a rack. I can immediately see my PUE. 792 set points are recorded and monitored by this software. Everything that's infrastructure related in that data center, I know. Now that relates to the data center, which is critical. At the same time along the way, we rolled out fog light and spotlight to make sure AD and exchange were healthy, that we could constantly track this, that I can go back historically. Somebody tells me we had a problem with message delivery on a certain date. I can pull it up and take a look. Tell them, no, I was delivering in normal ratios, normal times. All the way down to, from the service level at that, all the way down to the server level. Because when you're implementing monitoring, if you monitor at the server level, you're proactive. But the true monitoring has to be at the service level. What's happening? Is the customer's application be delivered at the true time? Along with that comes items such as load testing your applications, measuring out, processing the information. Key performance indicators, we've had three generations of them, and you're saying, why is this in an infrastructure? Right? Key performance indicators are critical. You've got to be able to measure where you're at, and as you progress on, you must continually improve, correct? By establishing key performance indicators in the beginning, we were able to show how bad it really was. Well, kind of how bad. We didn't start that till January 2009, so close to a year later. But you're also able to see places where you can improve. So we can look at key performance indicators that had no impact of service. And we can see how can we improve further as we go along. The next level we brought in was risk performance indicators. Sat in and read some articles about risk performance indicators, and I realized the value immediately. If I'm not tracking and looking at items that could cause risk in my organization, I can't be proactive about preventing those from happening. So we implemented risk performance indicators. Now we're moving into a next generation here where we're looking at operational metrics and KPIs and how they tie to critical success factors. So now you can look at a series of operational metrics that might feed a series of key performance indicators, but in the end, strategically, they're going to align to what our overall goals and mission are. Simple way to put it is, have you ever thought about correlating customer satisfaction to the data of time to close a ticket? So they give you a warm and fuzzy of a 5, and you're looking at, yeah, that ticket was closed in a couple minutes. So how do you approach, and how do you measure, and how do you improve? Reporting is critical. We implemented a reporting strategy to keep executives informed. That matured quite a few different times to where now is more than a newsletter, because we're still dragging them into the IT world a lot of times. You know, we want to give them the approach, the eye level approach that they need, but we'll drag them into these projects at a deeper level to engage them, to let them understand, to help to grow their knowledge of what we're facing. A critical point for anything we do is capacity and demand management. If you don't focus on capacity and demand management, you cannot reach these levels of availability. I can honestly say we missed the boat on this during opening. We got the wireless hit. You know, all of a sudden these new devices came on campus. We were tracking demand and capacity, but we never thought about tracking DHCP addresses we could give out. So I had all this great wireless capacity, but I missed one. So as we're looking at this, we look at every aspect of the service. It wasn't too long to fix, but let's be realist, that's an out. The other thing we do is heavily drill the environment. So for every application we put up at Tier 1, we design drills. We model exercises. How should this work? And then we have to test it. If you don't, you can draw a drill, you can do a DR plan, you can do everything else, but if you don't test it and work it through, you're not, when the time hits, it may not work. So in our case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through our PeopleSoft implementation. This is our newest Tier 1 application. There are two sides to this, an A and a B side. One is in our main data center. One's in our co-location data center. Each side has 100 virtual servers running. Each side. Two blade centers pretty much loaded up. Two physical database servers. Being Oracle, I can't virtualize the database, and I have to use Rack for the conversion afterwards. So to make this a little more palatable for this presentation, I'll take it to the simple view. This is the high level. You have an application, you have a web services layer, you have an application services layer, and of course you have a database layer for this environment. On top end, we've got an ACE load balancer. ACE load balancer constantly monitors the health of the items below, and the items below constantly report back to it two different directions. Not just ACE goes and looks, the application also says, I'm okay. So it has to be two ways, it can't be just one. I need to know that the performance is there. You can't have a situation where you put a load balancer in and the performance is degrading, is dying, and the load balancer won't do the automatic failover. In this case, what we do is we run financials from one side of the house and we run our campus solution from the other side of the house. This hardware is capable of running, one quarter of the hardware is capable of running our ERP. So, wrong button. If the web layer fails on side A, FSM immediately transitions over to side B. The web layer then redirects itself and points itself back over to side A's application servers because they're still healthy. At this time, customers see nothing. They have no clue. Now, the rest of the IT staff's running around going, panic. On the application server side, though, let's say the next thing I have is a failure there. Immediately, through the balancing, it's going to point straight down to a set of live application servers, but they're going to focus on pointing back to the database servers on side A. Reason for that is the one point of failure I have a potential outage, depending on how many transactions are going on, is during the rack failure. When rack has to do its transition over, there's a time when the transition logs, the logs have to process before it's going to open up that database to be available. So if there's not a lot of transactions, the customer may see nothing. If there's a lot of them, then they might have a session break where they have to go log back in again. So in this process, we design the models to go this way. And the next part is you've got to test them. You've got to run these exercises each time through. So in the last part, what I'm going to talk about is where we ended up at. My favorite is called stumbling into the cloud. I'm going to differentiate what I think is the cloud because we all have our own opinion. Well, first off, software as a service to me is not a cloud. Software as a service is software as a service. I run an application they're providing for me outside in. I don't manage the application. I have no infrastructure tied to it other than an internet connection. Pretty much the majority of you have a public cloud of some type. I'm sure your organization's putting something out there on Twitter or Facebook or YouTube promoting the university, you know, and of course then you have the students doing the same thing about what you're facing. But by virtualization, what we've been able to do is create a dynamic private cloud. Internally, it does not matter where that print server is running from, as long as that client, when they log in, can print. Correct? So inside our organization, these services can float anywhere inside and out. They can traverse from VM farm to VM farm. And, of course, like I said, you're hearing VM, VM, VM. In a private cloud environment, that's what you're looking at. But we're talking about a geography. We're talking about 60 to 80 miles apart. We're not talking about it transition to another server in the same room. So by this, dynamically, a customer receives the same service. They don't care where it's at. They don't care what it's running on. They just know they can do what they were doing every minute. The next part we've leveraged is a hybrid. To us, straightforward, a hybrid versus software as a service. I've extended my network capabilities out. I can take part in the management of those applications. I can push VMs in and out of an environment. Depends on which one I'm looking at here. So I have responsibility for the infrastructure. I have a direct Active Directory link to promote that single sign-on, that high availability. Totally different approach. Those are out there. They don't really belong to me. I'm using those services. Those services can be dynamic and provision upward. The last one we look at is a combination of the two. We use Microsoft Live.edu for our student email, for their SkyDrives, all their capabilities. But on the back side, I do a lot of management. I manage the Exchange Lab side. I provision the accounts. I make it look like that SkyDrive is really inside through the portal applications. So what we've been able to do is kind of mix the two together to create an environment where students are receiving this service. We're managing a major part of the service, but it's so seamless and it's so integrated that it is a true mix of a public and a hybrid cloud. Some want to call it a community cloud. I don't know if it fits that model as much. So some lessons learned. The dynamic master plan allowed us to move real fast. It really did. We could evaluate, assess, bring a team together, make a decision, and execute. It made scope creep very difficult to manage. Okay? It really did. Still had a time frame, had a start and end, and we knew where we were going, but trying to make sure we're in the right direction at all times, that we didn't bring in another project that shouldn't be brought into the organization. Staff exhaustion, motivating everybody, customers, staff. Our staff and faculty and students have seen dramatic changes in the last 18 months. And along the way, from a new ERP, new process, business processes, to all of these projects along the way, we pretty much wore them out. In our case, it definitely was not a train at the light, at the end of the tunnel. And our staff are seeing that now. In fact, actually, it's the typical joke whenever I make that comment anymore is, oh, yeah, I'm wandering to the light. To handle our motivating everybody and our staff and customers, we really looked at communications and constant measurement. We have a person that's assigned to do communications, to handle change management in the organization, to lessen the pains or at least get ahead of those pains to make it simpler. Training and more training. If you do not train the staff to be the best, you cannot provide this high level of availability. They have to know the technologies. They also have to provide the input. They need to be able to say, you're evaluating load balancers, and I had a discussion with a group this morning about this. We were evaluating load balancers, and I really liked one product. But my team came back and said, no, this is the product we need. You know, they outweighed me because they know the technology better. It's really important that they're in this training that they're constantly seeing what's out there so they can be evaluating and preparing for technology changes so that they can adapt quickly. They also have to have the mindset of being willing to change. Other problem is containing VM sprawl. One of the problems when you roll out VM at this pace and this fast, VM sprawl is inevitable. You're going to have people just provision servers left and right. Next thing you're going, wait a minute, I'm out of hosts. I don't have any more. I got to get more licenses. What's going on? What happened here? Why did this go? So containing VM sprawl, there's tons of articles out there on best practices in VM. How do you contain VM sprawl? How do you monitor the environment closely? Also along this project line, we had continuous service improvement all throughout it. We may have finished the SAN, but I also might bring somebody in for an engagement to assess our storage area network. What is its performance at now? Doesn't mean I'm done with the project. I just need to relook at everything. I need to constantly do continuous service improvements and evaluate what we're doing. So in February 2009, this was the initial design of our high availability. This was the DNA of five nines. Create internet redundancy, WAN redundancy, create two data centers that are co-located and hot, create this great backplane with virtualization, storage virtualization, bring this all to a level that allows things to dynamically move within the organization. The reality is that's what we finished on 37 different projects in 18 months. So I hope I left some time for questions because I'm sure there's got to be a couple in here after that. Okay, a couple. I'll start with you.
I was wondering if all the different layers of redundancy, different services, routing, switching, VM, how do you handle testing the different ones and how often would you test?
Oh, yeah, the drills are critical. A time pattern for drills, it varies. I mean, as far as what we're going to do when. We have actually a window set up in our spring break that allows us to do anything during production time. So we can take anything down. So we can run a drill while people are there because we're not going to impact true teaching and learning. We're going to impact staff.
Organize, like, every 6 months in the state,
We have not built a timeline like that yet, no. But I do have a drill plan where we know we need to run VSS drills, or we're running the core internet drills. A lot of this, too, in fact, it was kind of funny. We had a comment the other day, well, we need to test the internet drill again. We need to do the unit test again. Well, we had just had a cutover where it did itself. So, and also, every time we have something where something failed and something else took over immediately, is close, in-depth, after-action review of what happened. Look at everything. Why did that VSS say, I'm flipping? Why did that internet core go down? In our case, it's been pretty easy. You know, backhoes can do all kinds of stuff. So we do look at each one of those. But as far as the timeline, yes, I will have a timeline drill laid out. The team right now, I'd say, is resting, but they're not. The last stage of the PeopleSoft implementation is happening now, so we're rolling campus and portal at the same time. So my infrastructure team is hot and heavy and focused on that and some other items. Let me just keep going down this way, and then I'll work my way back up that way. Yes, sir. You kind of noticed that, didn't you? Yeah, the cookie jar was open. I'm trying to think of a good way to answer that. Yes, I did. We had the resources, but we had a major problem. At the same time that this was going on, we had just passed a bond, which had a lot of infrastructure dollars in it. As we were growing, adding these new sites on, 21 new buildings, new campuses. So a portion of that was designed for infrastructure. In the end dollar state, off the top of my head, I don't know if I want to throw a number at you, but somewhere around, right around the neighborhood of 8 mil. That included a data center in the process. I can get exact numbers. We have all those. You know, it's one of the things you kind of avoid always. But yes, I had the resources to do the job, which helps. I mean, I understand, but we got those resources for a reason. We proved the fact that we were going to change the way we did IT. We said we're going to run IT as a business. We are going to measure what we do. And so you got the initial pieces of it. Then as you matured out and they start seeing that, it's a lot easier. It was a lot easier to come to the table and say, this is the next piece in the pie and move forward. ERP system? No. Oh, no. No. Yeah, I'd like to see if I could do that. Let me go right over there.
What's the renewal cycle of your 3 years, 5 years plan?
On the hardware? Pretty much on your infrastructure hardware. It really comes down to, on servers, as you know, is do you have enough horsepower behind it to run that application? When you're in a virtualized environment where you're grabbing cores in, I mean, if you want to go to just life cycle, it'd be 5 years in a blade. But that doesn't really mean anything. You know, you could go less or more depending upon what the technology shifts are and what the demands on the application are. On the network infrastructure, you look at 7 and beyond, depending upon what you can do. And there you're not talking about forklift upgrades. You're talking about, oh, yeah, I need to change out a supervisor module, or I need to change out a fiber card. So you're really not talking about major stuff there. Typically, that's component-driven. But in the virtualized world, a server is a server in the virtual world. It helps out. Yes? We have looked at it in a lot of different areas and aspects, especially on virtualization versus physical. We have a third party doing a BVA, business value assessment, on our client management solution side. We'll be doing the same thing on the data center side. Across everything, I mean, you have to have a healthy Active Directory. So if you have a starting point of nil, you know, you can't really measure that those two and do an ROI on that. But yes, we are calculating as we go through, and we're looking at, like I said, in our client management and on the data center, it'll be a third party. It won't be us. Alchemy, I do believe, is the group. Yes. You'll get a copy of this presentation along with, on my profile on EDUCAUSE, I'll be uploading from the other presentations from those other conferences. So if you want to take a deep dive into SRM, there's a deep dive into SRM. I'll be honest with you, I only have one half of it. I presented with VM there. And so they had their presentation, I had ours. Theirs was how it's mythically supposed to work, so you can go to the web for that. Ours was how you make it work. Let me come back up this way. In the back, anybody working? Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, I had to throw all the complexity in there. I didn't bring my experts with me. No, I understand what you're saying. The spanning tree, high risk, broadcast storms. A couple of things that really are critical in the process. Like I said, always focus on monitoring. Some things I really didn't bring to light is some of the tools we use on the security side. They're looking deeper into the organization, trying to protect me from internal threats and external threatening. The management of the equipment. You can't just stand this stuff up and say, forget it. It takes good sysadmins. It takes personnel that are trained. They need to know everything. The relationship is not, I'm a network administrator, that's what I do. They need to understand that as a network administrator, what that blade center that's connected there with that 10 gig link through that Nexus, there's a relationship inside of that. And they need to understand the intricate details that can cause problems. So it really requires that higher level. So I'll have to come back to that as staff and their capabilities and the tools they've implemented to protect themselves. Well, yeah. Do you shut down at night? Well, I'll clarify that. Do I have a body sitting there? No. I have six people on call. I pay six people to be on call. They will get a call. They will get a page. And they will respond immediately. But by then, we're hoping that the automation is taking care of the first problem, if it can. Yes, sir.
How does this affect your culture on your campus?
What, from the client side? I don't know. Mario, how has it affected the culture on your campus? I asked somebody that's down to that level. I mean, the service delivery is there, but...
I think for me, I've been involved with the team manager. The majority of the time, there's something down from the infrastructure side, our campus doesn't even recognize. Again, if there's a back cut on the fiber, then everybody might see that. But as far as things switching over, they don't see it. As far as all the changes, you don't really allude to it. Many of them have voiced their concerns, but fortunately, they do see that light, and it has been
You do it better than I did. From a project perspective, I could focus on the other side, which has been enlightening for them, because we no longer talk about, well, yeah, I need to get that HP server. Let me get a 480 for you. You need this much. It's okay. Your application needs this, and you need this. How much it's going to cost you? We use Lifecycle Manager and VM to tell us basically, here's my storage relational cost, my memory processor. Here's what it's going to cost the customer, and I'll have it ready for you immediately. So when you can go to that point, and that also helps in the change control process because a gold state image is a gold state image, and that's a pre-approved change. Yes?
How do you mitigate the monitoring state? I mean, most systems aren't designed multiple times per second. You have 315 seconds of downtime, because you're only calling each system once per minute. I mean, how do you actually keep 5 9 per second?
Never looked at it from that perspective. So many monitoring systems, it's a correlation of systems that determine, first off, service delivery. The service is down. The clock's ticking at that point in time. As far as what we are always focused on more than anything else is the proactive monitoring ahead of it to tell me that service is going to go down. Not all services. I mean, one thing I haven't really talked about is what the Tier 2 and Tier 3 services have benefited out of this, because those services are now in a very highly available environment too. And in reality, you could say, I'm pushing these up into the 4.9s and for applications you'd never put there. When the monitor goes, when there is a service down, the clock starts ticking at that point in time. So it's a correlation of events that cause that to happen. The key to that is all of the proactive warnings that come before. So typically when we do have an outage, and I'm not saying we're at 5.9s yet, I'm beat up every time there is. I have a wall of shame across from my desk. Everybody that's ever been in my office, they're all here. They know, wall of shame. And I make the person that had the outage write it down. It's not me. But that process is always to look at, okay, what did we miss on the proactive side? Sometimes it means we didn't tool set things right. And there's times when everything worked the way it was supposed to work, but just didn't work. Let's be honest, technology is technology. It's not that simple. If it was, we wouldn't have a job, right? What we look at is, you know, when the clock starts and stops, that's pretty straightforward. That's easy to tell through service monitoring. But what we really have to look at is the proactive monitoring before that event happens. What was going down? And the next thing is we learned a hard lesson maybe a month or two ago in the early stages of the campus rollout, where we're not really rolled out yet. And we had we actually didn't have the monitoring correlation set correctly. So we had a SAN degradation happening, but we were not tying that to the OEM monitoring in Oracle to show the relationship to the service delivery. So had we done that, we could have headed off an early outage of the application. But technically, the running monitor said it never went down. Well, I mean, a lot of the monitors, on the other side of that, too, is a lot of the service level monitors like Foglight, Agent Base, also log in the machine to feed the logs back up. Okay? So it's not that the monitor is always coming this way, it's coming two different directions. One is a request down and it extracts. Correct. Yes?
So do you have a start date when you're already into your 5.9 start date?
I was in my 5.9s as soon as we said the word, it was 5.9s. And within the tolerances this month, yes. Last month, no. I measure month by month. The person in the back of the room measures forever. Never forgets a thing. We measure month by month and we report month by month, but we track and trend by the life. Are we at the point now where, yes, every core service that's supposed to deliver at 5.9s is being measured at 5.9s, and when there is something that impacts that possibility of the 5.9s, it is, like I said, it's everybody to the deck. What happened? Why did it go wrong? What can we do not to have this happen again? Am I going to get whooped? I don't know. One of these days I might. But as it stands right now, this is how we operate from there. Last month we had a bad month in some external services that we measure. They're really not 5.9 services. And then we had an ERP due to a SAN failure, which not even on a live system yet, not even on a production system. There's a question over here. Yes. Oh, yeah, that's a big open question there. Yeah. Well, in our key performance indicator, we weight the impact of the outage when it comes to network. Okay? Because, for instance, if I have one switch down, a hardware switch failure that I can't help at the edge, so at the most 48 clients or 48 endpoints connected to that edge switch are out, yes, I do have a failure of service delivery to those 48. But if the rest of the 49,000 ports out there are 100% active due to that hardware failure, I can't ding the environment. What we do look at is performance degradation impacts, the impact of the outage to a location. Let's say I lose a location in our site. There has to be some correlation. That location might serve 5,000 people. What is the impact of that against 90? So in our key performance indicators, we take into account the impact of an outage. So you're talking about an operational metric, not really a key performance indicator. So an operational metric can feed up to a key performance indicator and be aggregated according to the impact it's going to have. So yes, it is an accounting. It is a statistical nightmare. And as you know, statistics can go how they go. But we do trend and track that very closely as we go through. Any other questions? We increased our total number of staff more on the ERP side because of the new ERP deployment. Four. That was it. And four new staff members that I didn't have. But we also, because we centralized, also we have these resources, and everybody was in part. When I say 152 people did this, they did. Even ERP staff were engaged in processes that we had to do. Everybody took part in this. What do you mean, what's the next project? Our next project is straightforward, enhancement of services to the customer. Infrastructure sucks. Try selling infrastructure. You can't do it. Now what I need to do is leverage a lot of these technologies that I have, and I have the infrastructure to build off of, to enable innovation in the classroom, to show value to my customers. That's what I have to do now. So in that process, we're deploying telepresence. In that process right now, we're improving unified communications and how we leverage unified communications. I've got distances that are gigantic. So our total goal right now is speed of delivery of service, quality of delivery of service. We built an infrastructure that is dynamic. I can do what I need to do. Yep. Best way to put it. Anything else? Yes.
For wired and wireless,
We do have tools that we use to monitor the performance of the wireless network. Okay, but when you're talking about host integrity checking and having an endpoint device that shows that pass through in a wireless network, no, I do not. In an internal network, I do have tools that go out and come back in, so they go out pathwise and come back in, so I can trace paths that application calls are happening to make sure that service is available internally and externally. Yeah, network access control. Clean access, you mean. On the client management side for internal equipment, we utilize Alturas to manage the entire environment. So we don't have a knack on the inside environment. Not saying that I might have one at a certain point in time. Clean access is how we are actually provisioning access to our wireless network, but we have not turned it on yet to the point where it will actually force that client to install every patch and every virus piece. But clean access is in our network and capable of doing that. We have we use the wireless access controller in a redundant array. Our goal right now is to take that to the new model that Cisco has, where they're not bound to controllers anymore. They can float between controllers. All I can do now is bind them to two controllers. If one controller is not available, to go to the next controller. In their new model, in the new software updates, I can just say, here's a pile of controllers. You pick which AP you want. And if that's gone, the controller will find another one. So the cloud wireless, as they put it.
So they use username and password
in the software? Huh? Yes. I will qualify that one. Now that we've got the portal in for students, we are now having our students do it, 460,000 of them as far as IDs right now. So at the present time, we did not have that requirement we just gave them port 80 access, and that was it, 80 and 443, and we isolated them off in a different direction. Now the challenge we had as we rolled out student logins is the fact that they didn't know what their IDs and passwords. We didn't have any other tools they could use. We had disparate IDs. They could be logging into one system one way, another system another way. Now that we're at a single sign-on, and they now have been learning, this is my username and password, yes, now they can log in to every system. So that's one of the last projects as we go through and rolling out right now is authentication for students. We have a high transient population. People come for one semester, gone, come back, gone. So managing that level of accounts was a challenge.
What's the answer?
90,000 students. My AD right now is 400,000 accounts. I have to provision identity back and forth between it. Who's active now, who's not? Because they'll go and they'll come back. Yes? I had a great opportunity. No, I mean, I'll be realistic. Like I said, when I started off this question is, I know at one time point in my career, I always said, boy, I'd just like to throw all that garbage out and rebuild it. I would never wish that again.
Get to that point.
you have an active and a DR system now?
We do, yeah.
So, to be honest with you, I didn't have to design for that. And when we designed the ERP here, I had Oracle in the room, I had HP in the room, I had EMC in the room, and our staff to come up with a design that would meet our requirements. Okay, we looked at every possible option that there was. So I had experts in the field to do it. That's why I said strategic partners are critical. I would imagine that DataTel could have it done. It's just a matter of bringing the right people in the room, saying, this is what I want to achieve. What is it going to take? Be prepared for sticker shock, but that's what it's going to take in the design. You really have to bring the right experts in play. Oracle had like six people at the last one, you know, all trying to figure out and wrap their hands around every piece of it. They knew the HP hardware. They knew the EMC hardware. It took all of them in a room together to really come up with that architecture. That's what you need to call on. Call on your partners. Bring them in. Tell them what you want to accomplish, and they'll tell you how you can accomplish it.
So you consider then your maintenance windows to be part of your planned downtime, or they're separate?
I tracked planned downtime now. Right. Of course, planned downtime is planned downtime. But I do track planned downtime. I'm not allowed to have that either anymore. And the reality is you don't have to. I can transition and upgrade one side of a system and then flip between the two and transition and upgrade the other side of the system. I do have maintenance windows, but those maintenance windows still count against me unless I have scheduled planned downtime.
And a
sure. Now, we just got off of DataTel, or we're getting off of DataTel right now, and our DR site could operate without doing that. Okay, now I wasn't in that architecture of DataTel, and the people are, of course, no longer, they've been transitioning to PeopleSoft. So I know it is possible to have it transition. Now, the capacity of the license, I don't, in our case, it was a DR only, payroll, mission critical, that was all you're going to do, cut checks. So I'm sure the licensing was a minimized license for the DR side. But it was possible without major startups or major license transfers and all this to go to the DR side and run the DR side. And we had tested that before. Like I said, it comes down to your strategic partner. It comes down to DataTel, their side, and saying this is what it'll take to do it. Or maybe they'll tell you you can't. Then you got to say, that's a tier one app, but I'm going to run it 99.9. That's all you can do. Yes? Yes, it does. And there's no, it doesn't matter where it comes from and what happens. It's seamless.
So it's just a single internet connection
to each data center? On steroids, yes. It's two pipes coming in.
Two separate AS numbers for each data center?
Oh, yeah. Actually, four. Because you have to have redundancy inside of there. Your firewalls, our firewalls are four strong on each side. The DMZs are four strong on each side that filter through there. BGP between the two for health integrity. But like I said, it doesn't matter which side cuts over. One data center can be down. It's hitting the core. It's not hitting the data center switch.
What's your conversion?
Nobody's ever seen a thing visually. I'd have to get one of my network people to actually give the numbers on what the true conversion was. But we have had six failures due to the data center we were building. We're building in the data center where we had the internet connection at. There's plenty of times when the contractor would unplug something. nobody ever saw a thing. The monitoring would tell us that we were on the one leg, not on two legs. Somebody would go find out what's going on, get the other leg back up again, and that's about it. So there, it is seamless to the users and the design we have, completely seamless.
Even though the pipe might change from two, for
example? Yeah, the pipe will spike. And the pipe we have is 2 500s that are burstable. So the burstable comes in play. So if I'm running 2 500 streams and all of a sudden I lose one, my other is going to burst to a gig or beyond. I have the burstable ratio in there. All right. Well, thanks a lot. If you have any questions afterwards, let me know.
You You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.